Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. We are thrilled to have Dr. Sepp Panna here from Quantum Radiology. Quantum Radiology, I think, is one of the largest, if not the largest, radiology and imaging group here in Atlanta. I think you have something like 20 or 30 centers more.
We have 40-plus radiologists on staff and over, I think, 100 employees.
Yeah, so certainly a big resource here in Atlanta in the imaging field. And we've been wanting to have a show on imaging for quite a while. So, and I know that you're a subspecialist in your field. Today, our topic is going to be interventional radiology, which is kind of a subspecialty in the imaging field. And let me just tell our listeners a little bit about your background. You've worked and were highly recruited from Emory University to quantum radiology, I think, right? And served as chief of interventional radiology at Grady as well and helped build that program from the ground up. Is that right?
I did. It was an exciting time in my life.
Yes. Yeah, so you have technology that you're bringing in and you have patient bases that you're building and you probably created services that weren't even there before probably when you got there.
Well, it was originally the interventional radiology department at Grady was well known and once I finished my fellowship at Emory, they asked me to stay on board, help revitalize it. And during the time I was there, I helped bring back some of the procedures that had kind of fallen by the wayside, brought some new procedures to the table, increased the volume, and really kind of polished up the department.
Very good.
We got new equipment, state-of-the-art equipment down at Grady, and you know, I can tap myself on the back and say that we really turned that place into one of the top-notch subspecialties.
Very good. And I know that you've carried that over to quantum radiology presently. I want to kind of just orient our audience a little bit that maybe is not that familiar with imaging to begin with. So imaging basically uses modalities such as ultrasound, x-rays, CAT scans, MRIs as the kind of treatments, things they can expect when they come to you. And the basic idea, I think, is that you get a referral in, there's something going on, you take a picture of something or find out what's going on through the use of this image that you obtain, and then you actually treat from there. Is that correct?
That's correct. Let me first start by saying thanks for having me on the show.
Sure, you're welcome.
I'm delighted to be able to help educate your audience. And from a selfish standpoint, I'm happy that I can brag to my partners now and have some ammunition in my verbal jousting with them on a day-to-day basis.
Very good.
But back to your question, this is a very common misconception that people make in general that about what radiology truly is. Well, let's start from the beginning. So diagnostic radiology is really one of the most dynamic and cutting-edge subspecialties in medicine. Your average diagnostic radiologist is a doctor that is typically behind the scenes and interprets images that are taken by technologists in every subspecialty or modality. For example, MRI, CAT scan, plain films, which we call plain films, which are general x-rays that you probably think about when you think about an x-ray. MRI, as I said, nuclear medicine imaging, ultrasound imaging. These things are brought to us. And in this day and age with computers and technology, we sit behind a computer screen and interpret the images, give our diagnosis, our interpretation, our conclusion, our impression. And this report goes back to the ordering clinician. Correct. Mm-hmm. And they get, hopefully, the information that they want.
Very good. Now, for our audience listeners who, like you and I, aren't in the medical field, let's back up a little bit and let's tell them what is a CT scan.
Okay.
What's CT stand
so,
for?
So we call it CT scan or CAT scan, which is essentially a computerized scan that takes almost a three-dimensional image and puts it into a two-dimensional image for us to interpret.
Okay. And it's so the computer's doing part of the work.
Think of it as a slice through the body that's put up on the screen that you can look at and see that particular part of the body and interpret that image.
Okay, very good. And an MRI would be?
An MRI, very similar in terms of its ultimate goal in terms it's a slice of the body, but instead of using radiation, which a CT scan does, an MRI uses a different type of technology, magnetic technology, fancy physics, well, far beyond my scope, but is converted, computerized, and an image comes up as well.
Okay, very
different use, different information, oftentimes will be complementary to one another.
Very good. All right. So with the, and I think most of our listeners know about an X-ray and an ultrasound because they probably had that experience at some point in their life. But let's kind of go a little deeper. We've talked a little bit about just radiology in general, but I want to talk today, and we're going to spend most of our time on interventional radiology. So I know that is a sub-specialist. You're a rare bird among even your peers. Can you tell us a little bit about your interest in that, how you got there, and how that subspecialty works?
Sure. Well, interventional radiology serendipitously was a vocation, as my father was a radiologist and an interventional radiologist. So I was exposed to it at an early age. I always knew that I wanted to be a physician. And after the many years of training, including 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, an internship year, which is your first year of residency, 4 years of diagnostic radiology, then an additional fellowship year.
So when are you going to get busy and start
14
working?
Years, right? Yeah. Finally, at the end, you get into your practice and you do interventional radiology. So what is interventional radiology? It's a subspecialty of diagnostic radiology. We're kind of the superheroes of medicine. But I should say that all physicians really are superheroes. The amount of sacrifice it takes to become a physician this day and age is really remarkable. But I joke often with my non-radiology colleagues and people not in medicine that I'm kind of like a fancy plumber. We do everything through the tubes and pipes in the body. It's a microsurgery. Some people call interventional radiologists endosurgeons. Essentially, what we do is try to treat every organ system possible in the most minimally invasive techniques that are available today. So often through a very tiny nick in the leg or in the arm, we drive our fancy catheters under X-ray guidance to the organ system that we want to get to and, quote-unquote, work our magic.
And so do you probably work in every body system, or every major organ system may be affected?
Sure. Interventional radiology is different in different hospitals and even regional. Depends on how much encroachment of our particular modalities and treatments by other subspecialties. So let's go back and talk a little bit about interventional radiology. It was developed in the 50s or 60s. We were the cutting edge of almost all
advances
in medicine.
Mm-hmm.
It's really because it's so engaged and intertwined with technology that it mirrors technology. And as you know, technology has advanced so much in the past 30, 40 years. That's how interventional radiology would come up with new procedures. We would perfect them to as much as
introduce
we could.
New
introduce
equipment.
Them, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes other subspecialties come around and say, hey, that sounds pretty cool. We're going to do that too. And so pilfered some of our toys. And then we go back to the drawing board and make up some new toys and ways to help people.
Which is a good question. How do you keep up with new advances? Because you're not only looking at advances in imaging, but also the equipment like the catheters and the things like that. So I bet keeping up just in your field is a job in itself.
Very much so. Fortunately, the vendors and the medical supply industry is very in tune with us, and they're always around showing us their new products. And we will, hey, look, this looks pretty good. Let's try it. Let's see how it does. There's some data behind it. We'll try it. If we like it, then we use it. And this is the way the interventional radiology has progressed. Someone will be innovative and come up and say, I think I can make this mousetrap better.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll come up with something smoother, slicker, faster, becomes bionic, and we use it.
Mm-hmm. Now, most of the imaging done by you and your group, is that on an outpatient basis or inpatient?
Well, a great question. Radiology is one of the specialties in medicine, which now in this political and medical environment really is dependent on hospital-based practice. Mm-hmm. Interventional radiology is even more so.
Okay.
Because let's face it, the equipment that we use is multi-million dollar equipment. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to have a freestanding mm-hmm. interventional suite. Now, there are some, and they're designed for certain things, but we are predominantly, and that's the interventional aspect of our group, is hospital-based. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're mostly doing work in the hospital?
Correct.
Okay.
We have some outpatient stuff, including our vein clinic, which we'll probably talk about a little bit later, but most of it is done within the hospital.
Okay, very good. One of the things we're going to try to do is narrow down, actually, because we could touch every single body system today into just a three or four major focus areas, if you would. We're going to basically cover a little bit in women's health, a little bit in cancer applications, some with the vein, vascular situations, and also talk a little bit in neuro with vertebral augmentation. So let's start with the women's health. I know uterine fibroids is one area where there's been a lot of advances in the kind of benefits and skills that you bring. So maybe you could just start there talking about what are indications, what kind of things are you doing, and of course I think the benefit to the patient is less intervention, less recovery time, smaller incisions, get better, faster kind of idea, right?
Everything you said, correct. Okay. Uterine fibroids, it's an exciting procedure to do. It's one of the procedures which I particularly enjoy. There are two people in our practice that specialize in the fibroids. We have eight interventionalists at Quantum Radiology. Two of us are basically do most of the fibroids. My partner, Mark Silverstein, does the majority of them because he was there before me, and he's built up the practice, and together we're the fibroid guys. They have done a remarkable job at both Quantum Radiology and the WellStar system, which Quantum is based out of, to have a fantastic fibroid program. The nurses that we have there are so in tune with treating the patients. They have perfected it. In fact, most places around the country, this is an overnight stay. Our nurses have just tweaked it so good that they'll get you in and out on the same day so you can sleep in your bed at night.
Wow. Okay. So let's start at the beginning.
Let's talk about fibroids.
Let's talk about fibroids.
Are a smooth muscle tumor that are benign, so they're not, quote-unquote, dangerous in the sense of when people think of tumor, they get a little bit worried. They're very common in African-American people, but they can be seen in any person. Any person can have a fibroid. My mom has a fibroid. Mm-hmm. But some people are just not symptomatic from fibroids. The fibroids typically start growing around puberty, and nobody knows exactly why or how, but they'll start to grow. Some women's faster, slower. Again, some women will have fibroids everywhere but very little symptoms, and some will have some small fibroids and significant amount of symptoms. These symptoms, what do they include? It's typically bulk symptoms. These fibroids can become big enough where they push on the bowel or bladder, so you have to go to the bathroom a lot because it's just not letting your bladder fill up. They can cause bloating, cramping from stretching out the structures in the pelvis, the ligaments and whatnot. You can have heavy bleeding. Mm-hmm. This is probably the
most... Which is, to me, nuisance.
It's still gonna be very a much nuisance. So. I mean, you know, for the women out there that suffer from fibroids, mm-hmm. we're talking about some women
quality
who have
of life.
A whole month of a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is, you know, they cannot... They don't have their life.
Right.
So our goal is to try to help. And fibroids were kind of found serendipitously around 30, 40 years ago when women that had pelvic trauma, they came in, interventional radiologists such as myself came in to help stop the bleeding from the inside, from the small incisions that we make and go to plug up the blood vessels. And it found that women that had fibroids in these trauma situations, they tended to go away. So they did some studies and realized that fibroids, like all tumors, require blood to grow. So if you can stop the blood flow to the fibroids, they'll shrink down and go away. So that's the real basics of fibroids. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we get you in as soon as images are done, MRI, to make sure the fibroids are the type of fibroids that can be treated. There's some little details that have to be ironed out on the MRI before they can the
procedure
be done. Do
patients self-refer, or do they come through their OBGYNs?
Great question. Both.
Okay.
Both. Depends on the patient. Some will come from OBGYNs. Mm-hmm. Some will come from family docs or internal medicine docs. Some people will come by word of mouth. When I was at Grady, I had a dozen patients that came, oh, you took care of my cousin, and okay. will you help me? And we did that. The OBGYN doctors were a little bit hesitant in jumping on the bandwagon for fibroid embolization, but the data started to show up in not only our journals, but in the OBGYN journals. And now it's really a first-line treatment for fibroids in certain patients.
Okay, so if the idea is to shrink the vessels, tell us what exactly happens during fibroid embolization.
So patients come to the hospital. We go in through a very small incision in the leg, very similar to when patients go get their hearts checked.
Okay.
But instead of driving up to the heart, we stay in the pelvis.
Okay.
So we drive under X-ray guidance, take our catheters to the uterine artery, which is the artery that provides flow to the uterus, which is where the fibroids live. You have two uterine arteries, one on the left, one on the right. We drive into both of them through that same neck. Mm-hmm. You don't feel any of that because there's no real pain fibers in that area. Mm-hmm. Once we get into the appropriate spot, we inject X-ray dye, which gives us a map of what's going on. Once we have an idea of the anatomy, we use some smaller catheters to get into the artery that provides flow to the uterus, the uterine artery. And we inject these tiny little particles made of polyvinyl alcohol, I believe. They're very small. We call them 300 to 500 micron particles, mm-hmm. very small. And essentially what they do is they flow through the blood to the furthest part of the tree, mm-hmm. the branches of the blood
smallest.
Vessels, and plug them up mm-hmm. so that the blood flow to that area stops. No blood, no food, no nutrients. The fibroids shrink down and go away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how long is that procedure?
Well, the procedure itself takes about 45 minutes, okay. plus or minus. Some people have difficult anatomy. Mm-hmm. Some people are easy. Mm-hmm. I've done the procedure in under 30 minutes before. Mm-hmm. It's taken me 2 hours before. It mm-hmm. just depends on the patient, the fibroid load, how many fibroids, mm-hmm. how much it is. Some people take in more particles than others.
Mm-hmm.
Once we do the procedure, we monitor the patients for a couple hours, give them pain medicine, things to keep them comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Barring any complications, they go home the same day. They feel blah for a couple of days. We call it post-embolization syndrome. Mm-hmm. Common mm-hmm. means it's working.
Mm-hmm.
We give them medicine for that to make them feel comfortable. Typically, they're back on their feet 3 to 5 days after the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
I've done the procedure, a woman singing in concert 2 days later. Done the procedure, a woman's complaining to me 10 days later. It just depends on each patient. But most people are back to normal within 10 days at the latest. Fibroids shrink down over a couple of months, sometimes 3-6 months.
Do they come back to you for follow-up?
They do. We typically
do you actually measure, like, to see what if they're shrinking?
Exact. A great question again. Fibroids are measured initially on the MRI. That's one of the reasons
we do. So you know your
baseline? Exactly. See how much blood flow to it. We can tell if they're by the amount of enhancement from the contrast agents given. And we look at to see how much they shrink and how much blood flow or enhancement is shown up on a follow-up MRI, typically about 6 months after the procedure.
Okay, so post 6 months, you're living with how you're probably going to have them.
Sure. There's about an 85 to 90% technical success rate. Let's say 90% technical success rate. That means we can drive our catheters to the appropriate place and inject the particles safely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A little less than 5% of people, 10% of people have aberrant anatomy, changes in anatomy, variations in anatomy, make it difficult for us to get safely inject the particles.
Mm-hmm.
With that 90%, then we have a 90% clinical success rate. Same thing. About 90% of women will get symptomatic relief from their fibroids. A small subset of women require a second treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The great thing about the fibroid embolization procedure is that it treats all the fibroids, the fibroids we can see and the fibroids we can't see. So it knocks them all out.
Mm-hmm.
Fibroids grow back, but it takes a long time for them to grow back. Mm-hmm. So usually on the women that we do this procedure, average age 40 to 50, the chance of the fibroids growing back to become symptomatic again will be very low because once they go into menopause, they no longer have a problem with the fibroids because they're based on the hormones.
Now, the embolization route as opposed to the surgical hysterectomy route.
Correct.
That's just a way to kind of preserve.
Exactly. The only 100% treatment for fibroids is take the uterus out and you're done. But some women don't want to have...
Correct.
You know, keep in mind, our modality, our way of treating
invasive.
Minimally invasive, it's a procedure. That's a surgery. So it's a kind of a different scale, different level, different complications. Mm-hmm. Not that hysterectomy is not safe. It is. Mm-hmm. But it's just one step lower, and it's got some, you know, pros and cons. Everyone has to be evaluated. Some people are better with a hysterectomy. Some people are better for a fibroid.
Well, I would think in these days and times of delayed childbearing, too, women in their 30s and 40s that maybe have had fibroid problems are trying to preserve their fertility as well. So
sure.
It might be a good option for those patients.
Exactly. Hysterectomy means no more babies.
All right.
Fibroid embolization, there, we do caution women that want to have children after the fibroid embolization because there's no real data that shows, you know, whether that it helps or it hinders. But anecdotally, we found that some women actually do get pregnant after fibroid embolization because their uterus was so lumpy bumpy from the fibroids that the fetus couldn't implant and that later they find the component.
Very good. Yeah. All right.
Well, exciting.
Very good
procedure.
Very good procedure for
I get a lot of flowers
women.
Sent to me.
I bet you do.
It's a great procedure. They get their life back. It's
very
fantastic.
Good. Let's go on to another body organ system, if you would. I know you can also do a lot in neurology, and I talked to some of your folks. They told me that you're doing some interesting things in vertebral augmentation.
Correct.
Which is a mouthful. So kind of orient us and... educate us a little bit
from
the beginning.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit quickly about the neuro part you just mentioned. There is a second subspecialty in interventional radiology, which is called neurointerventional radiology.
Okay.
These are doctors that are typically treating things above the neck, is what we say, above the neck, intracranial things.
Right.
And that is a subspecialty that usually is reserved for tertiary centers such as big universities.
Right.
Just because the volume of cases in order to maintain your proficiency only exists in such a place. But that doesn't mean that regular interventional radiologists such as myself don't do some procedures above the neck. There are many that do. We typically will leave the very challenging cases for the tertiary centers. But let's talk about the vertebral augmentation we're discussing. That's essentially a treatment for fractures of the spine. When you have a fracture in the spine, if it is from a compression deformity, from osteoporosis, older patients with brittle bones, trauma, car accident, fall, and even from a tumor involvement, back pain is horrible, horrible. So our goal is to try to decrease or eliminate the pain in the back. So every time you have a fracture in your spine, the bone is no longer a solid piece. It moves a little bit. And every time it moves, the nerves fire and say, pain, pain. So what we want to do is try to put in some medical-grade cement through very small incisions in the back, and it's almost like a toothpaste consistency, and it finds its ways through the cracks and seals and stabilizes.
Does it harden?
It does.
Okay,
it hardens.
So it goes in soft, but it hardens.
Correct.
To kind of match bone.
Exactly. It based on time and temperature, it eventually hardens. And it is a great procedure. It has probably about an 85% success rate. And we're talking about patients that talk to you and say, hey, I have a 9 or 10 out of 10 pain. And you do the procedure, and they're down to 0, 1, 2. And if you've ever had back pain, you know that going from 5 to 4 is big.
Yeah, quality of life with back pain is huge.
Huge.
Yeah.
So we typically get our patients from our orthopedic or neurosurgeon colleagues. We get them from the ER, anyone that's got a back fracture. This procedure is done by orthopedic surgeons and neurosurgeons as well and some pain docs. But we have... The way interventional radiology is designed is that we are just so efficient with doing these minimally invasive procedures that I have orthopedic surgeons that send me every single one of their cases because they say, look, you guys do faster, quicker, we'll say better, Mm-hmm. Not that my buddies don't do it great as well, but you know, they're very happy with it. Mm-hmm. And so they'll send us the patients and we'll get them done in a very timely manner. Patients go home the same day. Mm-hmm. And their back pain is significantly improved.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there a limit as to, if you're talking about the spine, like up to what level can you do this procedure? Like C?
Wow, great. That depends on how much, how bold you are. Let's put it that way. It can be
for
done.
For good results.
Yes, it can be done. It can be done theoretically in any bone, okay? I say that loosely. We typically try not to do things in the upper cervical spine.
Okay.
However, as I said, there are some people in, that do those things. And so since it's a relatively infrequent place to treat, it's better to go to someone that specializes in that, you know, mm-hmm. same thing. It's volume-based. So we do numbers of them mm-hmm. in the upper back, lower back. But if it's going into the neck, then typically we'll get someone to a super specialist.
Okay, so we've talked about success rates with this. What's the recovery like?
Well, for vertebral augmentation, believe it or not, if you do this procedure, patients wake up, recover from the anesthesia that's involved. Sometimes it's general anesthesia. Sometimes it's conscious sedation, which mm-hmm. we call happy medicine. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're feeling fine the same day.
Mm-hmm.
They may be some soreness from the incision sites, but the patients are crying and then happy after. It's great. I'm not going to pretend it's a magic bullet, but it's very close.
Mm-hmm.
Very close.
And then post-recovery, as far as their activities of daily living, how are they limited?
We pretty much tell them to go back to what they were doing before. So if it was an older patient that was able to ambulate, then go back and do that. The key here is that if you cannot move around and you become bedridden or wheelchair bound or just even couch bound, these just lead to a spiral of bad things. And so we want to prevent
your muscles deteriorate. Yeah, lots of things go south in a hurry.
Sure,
So well, that sounds almost like the miracle.
It's a great
like a modern miracle.
It's a great procedure. I love it.
I think most consumers hear surgery or procedure, spinal cord, spinal column, and they get fearful and they think neck brace and they think I can't move. And that sounds like it might be an option for appropriate patients
for a
much faster.
Absolutely. It beats, you know, there are some, you know, doctors would rather their patients have a brace for 6 weeks. Some patients say, look, I cannot have a brace for 6 weeks, you know. And so, you know, everyone's different, so they have to be tailored. But it's certainly an exciting
and very good
procedure.
That is very exciting. Okay, let's move on to the next one, cancer. I think a lot of times we have, as lay people, we certainly think of radiology as one modality that we use to shrink tumors and has been around a long time. But I know you're doing some very new and exciting things in the treatment of cancer patients.
Very. Well, let me just quote a podcast, some urban verbiage. The stuff we do is ooh, crazy, crazy. I mean, this stuff that we do nowadays is fantastic. It goes back to science fiction, and you look
at it
and say, yes.
Yes.
I mean, it really is. Treating tumors from the inside with particles that radiate small amounts of radiation.
Locally.
I mean, it sounds crazy, but that's what we do now. With the help of our colleagues in oncology, medical oncology, certain patients that it would be very difficult to go through the exact criteria required to get into the different but we'll generalize. Patients that meet certain criteria can be treated in different ways other than systemic chemotherapy mm-hmm. or localized focused radiation. And that's where the interventional radiologist comes in.
So are these interventions mostly for solid tumor type cancers?
Any kind of tumor.
Okay.
We'll talk about that.
But not for leukemias or something more systemic.
No, exactly.
Okay.
We typically treat the most common areas we treat would be lung lesions.
Okay.
Liver lesions, kidney lesions, soft tissue lesions, and some bone lesions.
Okay.
So this sounds like a lot. You know, that's encompassing a lot of mm-hmm. things. There's some areas of the body that still have a different course of treatment that has been successful, and there hasn't been many changes. But the lesions that we treat now are done by a few different ways. For interventional radiologists, again, we use our fancy tools typically to go in a very non-invasive fashion, small incisions. If we do
When you say, what's small to you? Dr. Palmer?
Let's
may
say,
not be small to me.
Less than an inch? Half an inch.
Less than half an inch.
Yes. Okay. I mean, very
that
small.
That is very, very small.
I mean, you're just making a little
just
nick.
Enough to get a scope through or a catheter through?
Catheter through, correct.
Okay,
yes,
all right.
Yeah. And so we can treat liver tumors. We drive our catheters to the appropriate spot, and we can inject tiny little particles, very similar to what I described with the fibroids, but these are actually there are two different types that we use. Actually, more than two, but the two most cutting edge. The first is a particle that binds with the chemotherapeutic agent and carries that chemotherapeutic agent
directly to the tumor
so that we can get more direct, more focal, more concentrated, and less systemic
effects
to the patient. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's called what we call chemoembolization. The second type of chemoembolization is what we call radio-labeled embolization, in which the particle that we actually inject emits a radiation locally and destroys the tumor that way. That is something that we've been doing at WellStar over the past 2 years, and the amount of patients we're doing is just expanding very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They do it at Emory as well. And I'm not sure if there's anyone else in town, but it certainly is a very exciting field. The other way we treat tumors is something called radiofrequency ablation, what we call RF ablation, or cryoablation. Radiofrequency ablation is a something that essentially destroys the tumor cells by increasing the cell temperature, and cryoablation is freezing.
Okay, so one's hot and one's cold.
Correct.
Okay.
And those are done with a slightly bigger incision, but still small, maybe an inch. The devices are advanced under imaging guidance, typically ultrasound or the CAT scans, taken to the appropriate spot, and then the machines are turned on, and they essentially burn or freeze a small area and destroy the tumor. Very exciting, very, very good to do, very, very high success rate, very low complication rate.
So would these be small tumors, or can you actually do?
Again, great question. They're depending on the organ system, depending on the location, depending on the type of tumor, there's the size criterias and number criterias. You can't put in 20 probes and treat. But depending on it, we're talking 5, 7, sometimes a little bit higher, 10 centimeter lesions, which is pretty big. But they can be treated, you know, the bigger, the harder, the more complicated, but small ones, very easy to get to.
And then like chemotherapy cycles, would this be something that they'd have the treatment, they'd have the ablation, or they would have the embolization
mm-hmm.
piece, and then you'd go back in and remeasure tumor
sure,
size
absolutely.
Subsequently?
Sure, absolutely. In fact, those can be used in conjunction. We call it kind of a 1-2 punch where we do
okay.
both of
could
those.
Do both procedures
yeah.
concurrently.
Exactly. Or typically we'll do them the day after, you know, at one and then the one that, at the day after. We will follow the patients. Usually, you know, anyone that has cancer will be on some sort of imaging protocol anyways. You know, they need follow-ups and so forth. We typically will do a 3 to 4 month follow-up, figure out, see how it looks. Did we get improvement? Does it look the same?
And then could it be repeated?
And it can be repeated.
It could be
absolutely.
Repeated. Okay.
Some patients we've done 3-4 repeat procedures on. Maybe a new lesion appears, one that wasn't visible before. Mm-hmm. We go in and treat that. And if things go well, you might not need another treatment.
Okay,
so you could conceivably cure a lesion, destroy a lesion, especially if
from
it's
the
solitary.
Inside out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
from
gone.
The inside
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not operatively, how we
typically think of
excising something.
Yes.
Very good. Okay, well, let's move on to another topic here. I know that recently I've read that you've aligned with Georgia Vein Specialists, which is an exciting addition to your practice. So tell us a little bit about that and what capabilities you and they now have for the community.
Absolutely. That's another exciting part of our practice. Actually, it is our practice.
Okay.
Georgia Vein Specialists is just a group of quantum radiology.
Okay.
Exactly. There are two interventional radiologists in our practice, Dr. Ashu Rao and Dr. Glenn Kerwin, who are point people for the Georgia Vein Specialists. Essentially, what we do in that practice is we treat varicose veins, okay? These are these ugly rope-like veins that women and men have in their legs. And very frequently are associated, not only is it cosmetically an issue for patients, but there's pain. That's pain, itchiness, swelling, a number of symptoms that go along with it. Certain patients are candidates for treatment of the vein, depending on the etiology or the reason that the veins are like that.
Distended.
The most common is that the valves are not functioning appropriately. Okay. Veins have valves that prevent the flow backwards, to say it quickly. What we do is we, again, the beauty of interventional radiology, very small incision, put a catheter into the vein under ultrasound guidance. This is not painful. It's numb up the leg, use a special numbing technique around the vein. Overall, pain of the procedure is very low. Once the pre-setup is done, the vein is burned from the inside using a laser fiber that's in the catheter. And essentially what it does is destroy the vein from the inside and make it collapse and stick to itself.
So laser is one of your tools?
Yes. Yes. Very. You can do radiofrequency ablation on the vein as well.
Okay.
That was one of the original techniques, but the laser is fantastic.
Kind of,
and that's kind of, that's what we use. Very good, very very high success rate, destroys the vein, forces the blood to go into the competent or working veins, and those big veins shrink down and go away.
So you reroute.
Correct, reroute. And as a result, I mean, you can get just dramatic cosmetic results, and the pain associated with these varicose veins will go away. It's a little bit more complicated that there's there's some little tiny spider veins and other things that are done as well that can be treated with a subtle injection that can destroy them. But we're talking about a great procedure. In fact, my former mentor back in the Detroit area left his lucrative radiology practice and started a freestanding vein center, and all he does is veins because the need and the response is so great, and it's just a great procedure to do. So Georgia Vein Specialist is very easy. We have you can self-refer if you have varicose veins that you want to have treated. Our guys are great. They're very good at what they do. But we get a number of referrals from vascular surgeons and dermatologists and family docs. And procedure takes about 20, 25 minutes.
No, I know that it's dependent upon how many there are and where they're located and the severity.
The varicose veins?
Yes. Is this something that you can do in one treatment or over many treatments?
Hopefully it can be done in one.
Okay.
But sometimes, like any procedure, really, there's a chance that you might have to come back. But remember, some women have veins, or men may have varicose veins in both legs and in different parts of
them. Would you do them concurrently,
or
you do one leg?
They can. It depends. Everybody's different. There are some people that will do both legs. It's a matter of the doctor's philosophy. You know, if you do both legs, then you really aren't going to be moving around too much. So everyone kind of has their own philosophy on that. We prefer to do one leg at a time, but, you know, there's always exceptions to be made.
And then recovery, seems like they're up walking around pretty quickly. Is there limited activities?
Back on their feet. Immediately after, there's a compression stocking that they wear that helps keep the vein collapsed and stick together. And there's a protocol for that. They wear it for 24 hours and then a week during the day. You know, there's just a protocol which we describe to them. And that just helps prevent any residual, what we call recanalization or a flow back into that vein that would prevent it from staying collapsed.
Is there any age limit to that procedure in terms of, like, you do that under a certain age or over a certain?
Depends on how old you want to wear your hot pants. Really. No, there's no limit. It depends on, you know, the patient and you know, if they're old. Some women will get these varicose veins at a young age after pregnancy. And, you know, you have a 26-year-old, 27-year-old woman that is afraid to wear shorts in Atlanta.
Are there any potential complications like deep vein thrombosis or anything
very rare.
Like that?
Okay, extremely,
so the compression hose and stockings really kind of eliminate
rare.
That.
We evaluate for that. We watch for that. But it's very rare. Done correctly, the chance for getting thrombus in the legs in the deep system
very small.
Is very low. Very low.
Compared to the trade-offs that they get. Very, very good. Okay, well, we've covered those four body systems, but I'd like to spend just a minute or two talking about going back to the technology and the innovation required to keep up with your specialty. We've talked, I think these things sound like Star Trek and things you never would have guessed even 5 or 10 years ago, but I'm sure there are new things coming out that you all are beginning to talk about. So what's kind of on the horizon in your specialty?
That is so difficult to keep up with. Let me tell you, everybody in the medical innovative field, for not only on the academic side, but on the business side, is targeting minimally invasive procedures. Mm-hmm. So everything that was going on now is just being continually tweaked and made even more efficient, easier to do, safer to do. But certainly cancer treatment is at the top of the research and development.
Okay.
There are some things in the pipeline that are going to parallel the radiofrequency ablation we discussed, the cryoablation we discussed. Mm-hmm. There are going to be some additions to focused treatment using ultrasound and MRI in the future. That's just to name a few.
Mm-hmm.
The innovation is there. Mm-hmm. Let's hope that in the way the future is going in medicine, that we continue with this R&D and that it doesn't slow down.
Well, I think, and you've got two technology aspects that you're looking at advances. One is the actual imaging. So, for example, going from the old ultrasound grainy pictures to 4D ultrasound.
Absolutely.
Where we can see eyelashes on fetuses, that's one piece. And then the other piece is the actual tools you use. So the lasers and the catheters and the light scopes and things like that, that actually once you get in there, you can deliver or see or whatever.
Everything tied to technology. So Everything is becoming smaller, easier to build, and it all translates into the medical equipment as well. So we started off with rigid catheters that barely could go around a corner, a bend, and then another year goes by. They tweak the formula. The plastic becomes better, easier, and this every year improved. And there'll be a medical rep that comes the next day and say, hey, look, see how fast and easy this catheter goes around the bend. And they do. They just get better and better.
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple of myths I think you've broken today. One is, I think in medicine, a lot of times we think of radiology as not invasive at all. We think of you looking from the inside out or taking pictures or looking. And we've just spent almost an hour talking about you deliver inside, you work inside. That's really a new realm, and part procedure and part a little mini surgeries, not just taking pictures and that kind of thing. So,
yes. And, you know, I'll tell you, a lot of people don't know who their radiologist is because mm-hmm. they're behind the scenes. Interventional radiologists have a little bit more exposure mm-hmm. with their patients, which is nice. We get a chance to see the patients that we work with. You know, at Quantum Radiology, which, you know, we are servicing the entire WellStar system.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a great practice there. There are subspecialized radiologists there in every subspecialty of diagnostic radiology, musculoskeletal, neuro. We have some talented neuro guys and girls. We're starting a pediatric service line mm-hmm. that's we're really excited about. We have the interventional department, which was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm saying that because I'm in that. Mm-hmm. And the women's imaging for mammography and treatment, a very compassionate group of people that we have there. We're the largest radiology group in town, subspecialized in the I think I'll tap my shoulder and myself on the back. I'm very proud to be in this group. Very talented people.
I think the other myth that kind of you hear radiology and you have a thought of is, well, you brought up a good point in that, who is that guy, who is that gal? Now you're more face-to-face.
Correct.
Right with them, doing the procedures, following up, measuring, and actually more involved in the clinical care along the way instead of a snapshot and a moment in time.
Absolutely. In fact,
building relationships with patients.
Exactly. In fact, we're one of the few intervention. Well, I shouldn't say few, but we were cutting edge in the fact that interventional radiologists, not all interventional radiologists actually have a full-fledged clinical service, which we do. In other words, we have a clinic before that we see patients and after. We see our patients on the floor and round on our patients. This is something that's making interventional radiology succeed and thrive, and that's how it's going to survive mm-hmm. in the future.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you joining us today. Patients and colleagues can find you at www.quantumradiology.com. And to contact the system-wide number there, 678-626-0755. Thank you so much for not only your work in adding to what the public benefit is, for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it, and hopefully this will be my big break. Maybe someone on CNN.
You
maybe Sanjay Gupta is listening.
You never know. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.